Christopher Wall from the University of Delaware and his guests from Japan. It's nice to have you with us this morning.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's a pleasure to be here to show our procedures to a law student from Japan.
Well, we'll try not to put too much pressure on the attorneys.
Good morning, Your Honor. Jessica Zeldin from Rosenthal Monheit Gross and Gottes. I rise on behalf of the appellant to introduce my co-counsel, Charlie Moxley. Mr. Moxley will be making today's arguments.
Please, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Very well.
Honors, the issue on this appeal is whether, under the plain meaning of Delaware General Corporation Law, Section 151C, preferred stock is entitled as a matter of law to dividend rights. Dividend rights in the sense that, under some circumstances, at some time, the stock will receive dividends. The holders of the stock will receive dividends. It's an issue of first impression. It's an issue of statutory construction. Your Honors, we've handed out, just for the convenience of everybody, a copy of the statute. I intend to sort of walk through it with some specificity. What I would propose to do is to go first through subsection C, which is the part of Section 151, obviously, that directly addresses dividend rights. And then to look at the other subsections of the statute to see what they add to the analysis. When we look at 151C, Your Honors, it starts with the provision that the holders of preferred or special stock shall be entitled to receive dividends. So we start out with what on the face of it would appear to be a clear affirmative statement that the holders shall be entitled to receive dividends. Obviously, the question is, what dividends are they entitled to receive? In the next portion, the statute goes on to say that the dividends they're entitled to receive are at the rates on such conditions and at such times as shall be stated in the certificate or applicable resolution. So it's at the rates, times, and circumstances set forth in the statute. I take it that no one would disagree that the job of courts and lawyers in interpreting the statute is to look for its plain meaning, if it's clear on the face. And obviously, tortured readings can be given to anything. We submit that the plain reading of this is that the holder shall be entitled to receive dividends, and that there shall be some times and some conditions under which dividends will in fact be payable.
Could you explain the if any language?
Yes.
If you read down where it says when dividends upon the preferred and special stocks, if any.
Right.
And doesn't that strongly suggest that dividends are not required?
Absolutely not, Your Honor, in our reading. I mean, it's obviously up to you to figure out if we're right. But we contend that the first part of it, and maybe I can explain what that means and then how the if any relates to it. The first part of the statute says that, the holders are entitled to receive dividends at the rates and conditions. Maybe I'm doing this all wrong, and I should just jump and address your question directly and then come back. That the if any, Judge, comes out of the fact that under our interpretation, it's perfectly clear that preferred stock in a given case may or may not have dividends, because the company is entitled to establish the conditions and times and terms. It can't be zero, we say, for reasons I'll address in a moment. But the company establishes the conditions, and the conditions, I mean, we've all seen cases like this. The conditions may be when the capital structure is such, or the income is such, or other stock has such, but the company can establish conditions, there's no doubt. We're not contending that preferred stock becomes a dead instrument and has an absolute entitlement to dividends. Not at all, just the opposite. We're saying that at least under some circumstances, could the company establish nominal dividends, very small dividends? Under the language of the statute, I don't see why it couldn't, because it doesn't specify the amount. But there have to be some dividends. But if you If you assume that interpretation of the first part of subsection C, then I take it as clear that there are circumstances where there's going to be dividends payable and circumstances where there aren't. You know, maybe there's no dividends unless the common stock is earning so much per share or whatever the corporate lawyers come up with in a particular indenture. So there's going to be circumstances where there's no dividends under our interpretation and under theirs. So I think the, if any, from our perspective, is worse neutral because it's equally consistent with our interpretation as it is with theirs.
And what did the certificate say in this case?
The certificate in this case said that the preferred stock should not receive any dividends. It's absolutely unequivocal. And so when Audiovox says that this is a matter of contract, if it's only a matter of contract, then we lose because the certificate says that we don't get any dividends. But it's not just a matter of contract. Their interpretation of the law here misinterprets it. They are right. There's a whole bunch of cases that say, okay, we're going to interpret this indenture, and what does it mean? What's the contract between the parties? But there are numerous cases that also say, well, we have some law here. For instance, there's the Gaskill case, which is a leading case. And that, in that case, the rights have been established in the bylaws and not in the certificate. So the law took precedence over the arrangement between the company and its shareholders, and that stock was invalid.
I knew what the certificate said when I asked you the question. It's your position that it was just legally impossible to do this, that you couldn't pick a rate of zero.
Judge, it's a matter of interpretation, obviously. Subsection C, I mean, you have to interpret that sentence, right? And so could you interpret it that way? Could you say, as the court below did, that, well, zero, the rate could be zero? I submit to you that that would be a very convoluted way for the legislature to have addressed this issue, particularly in the context of the statute, which in other sections, as I'm sure you've seen, the legislature made distinctions. You know,
Would that same logic apply if we move away from dividends and address liquidation preferences? That is, that your position, statutory construction regarding dividends, equally applicable to liquidation preferences. That is, that you cannot, under the statute, provide that there shall never be a liquidation preference.
I think that's correct, Your Honor, because the language is parallel.
So under your interpretation of the statute, any preferred stock of a Delaware corporation must at least authorize the board, under some circumstances, to define both a dividend right and a liquidation preference, correct?
No, there's one part of that that in our reading I would state a little bit differently. It's the distinction between a preference and a right. I take it a preference is that... Yeah, I mean, it's going to get more, but yes.
I would imagine you're saying that there would be a liquidation right. That is, at the very least, a preferred ought to be able or should be able to share pari passu on liquidation, but not necessarily preferentially.
Right. I mean, I think that's what the language of the statute says, that the company can establish it. It's the exact same parallel language, as shall be said. So
it's not legally possible, then, to have a preferred stock that would have a liquidation right and preference, but no dividend right, or to flip it around, a dividend right and preference, but no liquidation.
I think that's exactly right, and that's the issue on which there's no case law. There's obviously a bunch of cases out there on preferences and what preferences shares are entitled to. But here, I'm sorry.
Now that we understand that, are you aware of the practice in terms of the use of different kinds of preferred stock as financing vehicles? I mean, isn't it the case that for years practitioners have created preferred stock that has no dividend rights, or in some cases dividend rights and preferences, but not necessarily a liquidation preference?
Certainly with respect to preferences, yes. I mean, there's sometimes a preference as to dividends and not liquidation, or liquidation but not dividend. But the statutory issue, I'm not aware, and there's nothing in the record here of any practice of establishing stock of a preferred nature that doesn't have some dividend rights and some liquidation rights. There's certainly no case that's ever addressed that issue. Under the New York statute, which we cite in our, I believe it's in our reply brief, the New York Business Corporation Law section that's analogous to 151, The leading treatise, White on that, interprets the language of that statute as saying that as to dividends, there can be a limitation, but there can't be a total deprivation of dividends.
Meaning that you cannot deprive the board of the power to define a dividend right under at least some circumstances? Or is it a liquidation right? I wasn't sure.
Right. I mean, in the commentary on the New York statute, it's a dividend right. But I'm not sure that I'm not phrasing it differently than Your Honor. In my understanding of it, it's not so much the power you give to the board, but the fact of how the board exercises that power.
Well, no, we're talking about the power that you give to the board, aren't you? If you have no dividend right, that is, if the statute is construed your way, then the board, there has to be a dividend right, meaning that the board will always have the right and will never be precluded from exercising the power to declare a dividend with whatever terms it chooses.
No, I mean, in a given year or in a given 5 years, I mean, an extended period of time, there could be a situation where the board, where a particular issue of preferred stock doesn't get any dividends. I mean, we're not saying...
I know that, but if the statute is construed not your way, but the other way...
Yes.
Then, in effect, it is authorizing the board, by contract, can preclude the board from ever declaring a dividend because it wouldn't have the right.
I think that's right.
Or the power.
Right, I mean, that's what happened here.
Okay.
I mean, here the certificate says that there shall not be any... dividends, so I take it that's the case.
And your argument is that it's legally or statutorily impossible to deprive the board of the power to define a dividend right, at least under whatever terms it chooses.
I think that's right, and I go further, of course, and say that they have to provide provide dividend rights in the sense that there are some circumstances under which there can be dividends. If you look at... Yes.
In terms of general statutory construction, would you agree that the Delaware corporation law is generally considered to be an enabling statute, an enabling set of statutes? That the overall thrust of it is to authorize corporations to operate in any fashion they choose within the limitations of the statute? And I'm saying that only because you don't have to agree with that characterization, but assuming for the moment that the Delaware General Corporation Law is generally considered to be an enabling statute or set of statutes, how does your interpretation of Section 151C comport with that?
It comports with it in the context of sort of the second clause in your statement of that rule when you said subject to the statute. I don't think there's any question under many cases that if, for instance, preferred stock is declared in the bylaws, or if the company doesn't pass a resolution they're supposed to, or there was another case, the Starring case, what happened there? The certificate said that common stock shall be subject to redemption, and the statute did not so provide. So there you had an agreement within the company, between the company and its common stockholders, that the common stock should have these rights. But what did the court say? The court said, well, no, the statute overrides. So I guess my answer to your question is when you have a specific provision in the statute, as we say you have here by the statement that the preferred stock shall have dividend rights, that specific provision has to be complied with. I understand that subsection A, and Audiovox emphasizes that, has broad language saying that a company may establish special rights of this nature or that nature, and of course that's fine, but it's not inconsistent with the fact that when the legislature started to deal with the matter specifically in subparagraph C, that it put the shall in. I think in a way that a dispositive element of the statute with respect to the job of construction that the court's called upon to do here is that in subparagraph B and E, addressing redemption and conversion rights, what did it say? It said may, that the stock may have these rights. But then it said that the rights, if they're given, shall be set forth in the certificate. And then in C and D, as the dividend and liquidation rights, it said that the stock or the shareholders shall have these rights. But again, it said that the the rights at the, as established, the terms as established, shall be set forth in the certificate. So, and this wasn't reached by the court below, and I think it's dispositive in terms of that the shall, in the first part, in the first clause, shall have dividend rights. That must mean what it says, because the point that the certificate, that whatever the rights are have to be set forth in the certificate, that's true as to all the rights. That's true as to the redemption and conversion as well as to the dividend and liquidation rights. So, in summary, we think the statute is clear on its face. Audiobox has argued that we're asking the court to get into the business of running a company's businesses, but that's a misconception on their part. All we're asking the court to do is interpret the plain language, reach the effect that the rule here in Delaware is the same as in New York. We think that the statute is clear on its face. There's certainly no evidence of any practice to the contrary that a ruling here would be disruptive in any broad sense. So we ask you to find that the holders of preferred stock are entitled to some dividends as determined by the company, subject to there being nominal, if that's what the company, if that's how the company establishes them.
Thank you. You still have about 4 minutes.
Thank you.
Mr. Kelly, good morning.
Good morning. Justice Holland, Justice Berger, Justice Jacobs, may it please the court, Michael Kelly for the Appalee Audiobox Corporation. I do take issue with my colleague's statement in his brief that the issue below was not understood by the Chancellor. The contrary, I think the court below understood quite well what the issue was before the court and correctly interpreted Section 151. And for reasons that follow, I submit that any contrary interpretation would be illogical and contrary to the intent of the statute. In my colleague's opening remarks, he read one thought stating that the first stock shall have dividends, and the second thought is then it shall set the terms, the rates, conditions, and time. The problem with that reading is there is no period after the word dividends. If this statute read preferred stock, the holders of preferred or special stock of any class or of any series thereof shall be entitled to receive dividends, period. If that period were there, again expressing two separate thoughts, as I heard my colleague express in his remarks, that would give the appellant some fuel for fire here. But there is no comma there. There is no period there. It's one thought. What dividends did the preferred stockholder have? What rights do they have? Those as stated on such rates, on such conditions, and at such times as shall be stated in certificate of incorporation. It makes sense, I submit to this court, that if you read that sentence as one thought, the clear meaning, as evidenced by the interpretation given by the court below, is that if it's not in the certificate of incorporation, you don't get the dividend rights.
So how do you respond to the argument that subsection C and subsection D use the word shall, whereas subsections B and E use the word may?
I respond by stating that, as the court below pointed out, if you were to use may in subsection C, in other words, read the statute as saying the holders of preferred stock may be entitled to receive dividends as such rates, etc., as shall be stated, you're not ensuring that the preferred stockholders get what's stated in the certificate of incorporation, as the Chancellor more artfully stated than I, if I may quote, the term shall is meant to require the corporation to be both clear regarding rights accorded to the preferred stockholders and to adhere to its contract with the preferred stockholder. In these instances, the use of the word may instead of shall would allow the corporation to escape from its contractual duties. So I submit that the meaning given by the Chancellor and the meaning I think the legislature intended is if you put may there instead of shall, there's an iffiness.
Does that mean that you can be iffy or imprecise in terms of creating redemption rights, which is the subject of subparagraph B, or convertibility rights, which is the subject of subsection E?
No, Your Honor, but I think it means that if you are to venture into, as we do in subsection C, unlike A and B, venture into what terms must be stated in preferred stock. Here there's reference to rate, time, and conditions. You don't have that reference in the redemption section, which I think is the distinction. We're now venturing in subsection C for the first time in the statute as the specific terms of the contract. And we know this court's history that preferred stock is a nature, is a contract animal, contractual animal. So when you state that dividends at such rates, on such conditions, at such times, you don't have that language in the redemption section. You don't say redeemed at such times, condition. So I submit to this court that because you're now for the first time venturing more down that path of what terms are in this contract, preferred stock is a creature of contract, what terms are in there, you better state them, you shall state them, and you shall adhere to them. Well, I think that's the only plausible reading.
If that's your distinction.
Yes, Your Honor.
How does that work in subparagraph E, which does use language, and I'm quoting, at such price or prices, at such rate or rates of exchange, and with such adjustments as shall be stated in the certificate of incorporation?
Well, again, you're talking in A about just what's stated on the certificate of incorporation as opposed to what is listed as far as part of the preferred stock language. Let me just read that if you're under any class here. Maybe. Well, it still does not leave open the possibility. It's down that path, I agree with Your Honor, but it's still not as definitive as C, where you're actually talking about the possibility of a zero rate, the time, rate, and conditions. So I submit to this court that it is similar, but I submit that C is more specific and is addressing preferred stock, which E is not specific to. C is specific to preferred or special stock, and I submit the distinction is...
Well, so is E, isn't it? There's no such thing as convertible common, is there?
Well, it says any stock of any class or of any series thereof, so any class. I submit that's not specific to preferred or special. And I wish I could get into the head of the legislature, but the only distinction I can think of, Your Honor, having thought about this for many hours, is that because C is specific to the realm of preferred or special stock, and because that is a special area of contract, and we know that the Delaware law since 1929, preferred stock, if it's not in the contract, you don't get it. That's why I think C is different than A, B, or D. I echo the question of Justice Berger that the if any is really fatal to the appellant's argument. Why is that if any there? I submit because, as the Chancellor pointed out, the two shalls were there to make sure that the corporation could not escape its duty of providing what's in the preferred stock contract. I think if any is a way of making it clear that these are not mandatory. You don't find if any in anywhere else.
There is another possibility, isn't there, as far as the distinction between shall and may is concerned, and that is that even though they're different words, they're used interchangeably and they both mean may. My question is, assuming for the sake of argument, there's at least that logical possibility.
Yes, sir.
Does your position necessarily depend on a distinction between shall and may? That is it your contention that the legislature meant to convey some different meaning by using those different terms?
My contention is I subscribe to Your Honor's argument, or question rather, that it is possible that may and shall could have been used interchangeably. I don't know. There's very little legislative history in the statute, so the answer is I don't know, but I do know that logically If we are to read the two shalls as mandating, as requiring the payment or the entitlement, as my colleague says, of dividends, that would turn our flexible corporate statute on its head. And I take great issue with my colleague's statement that there will not be serious consequences. I can only imagine the amount of preferred shareholders out there that have no liquidation preference or no dividend right. They would all be, I hate to say, but possibly, if not probably, flooding the courts with, hey, these shares are void. That's not what this legislature intended. This legislature did intend, when it passed this statute in 1953, it was mindful of the long history of cases going back to 29, the Gaskill case, saying that preferred stock is contractual, that we have a flexible corporate scheme here, flexible enough that we can set voting powers or not set voting powers. Par stock, no par stock. Liquidation, no liquidation. Preferred, no preferred. So I submit that to give the mandatory reading that my colleague suggests would be contrary to that long line of precedent. And also I submit, if it were that clear, why didn't the legislature just come out and say so? Preferred stock shall, in all events, afford dividend rights to its shareholders, period. It could have easily been done. Instead, what you have here is the sentence. There was no period after shall be entitled to receive dividends. Not even a comma. I could see that there's a comma. Shall be entitled to receive dividends, comma. At such times under such conditions. But there's no comma. Shall receive dividends at such rates on such conditions at such times as shall be stated in the certificate of incorporation. If it's not in the certificate of incorporation, you don't get them. That's the reading afforded by the court below. That's the reading that's consistent with the Delaware long line of precedent of flexibility of stating it in the certificate of incorporation. It's a contract, and preferred stock should be interpreted strictly because it's in derogation of common law. Again, my colleague's reading would turn that precedent on its head, reading into the certificate something that's not there.
Mr. Kelly, let me ask you the same question that I asked Mr. Moxley. Are you aware of any precedent or practice in Delaware or outside of Delaware that involved a preferred stock that had either no dividend rights or had dividend rights but no liquidation rights?
I can just say that anecdotally and hearsay that I've heard such animals, I do not know. And it was not in the record below, so I didn't do much research, but I have heard that there are such animals out there. But that's all I can offer to this court.
Are there any cases outside of Delaware that have posed this issue?
There's no case interpreting a similar statutory frame, but I did pull up a Supreme Court of New Jersey case, 1949, Agnew versus American Ice, which held that preferred stock does not have to issue dividends, but there's no in-depth discussion of the statutory framework, and I think there's some differences in the statutory language as Delaware, but that's the only case I could find, and that is at 66 Atlantic 2nd, 330. In my few minutes remaining, if I can just echo a few other points. First, what preference we do have here, my colleague mentioned that the certificate of incorporation was clear that the preferred stock had no dividend rights. I just want to emphasize that this preferred stock did have a liquidation preference. And I believe, I submit to this court, that is all that's necessary when you talk about a preference. There is no Delaware case on point, but when you look at the dicta of cases we cite in our brief, I submit, and Bilotti and Finkelstein quote them, it is the grant of the dividend preference or a preference on liquidation or of both of such preference to a claim or series of preferred stock that renders the stock a preferred or special stock. And I quote Justice Jacobs in the Sullivan money management case, where the again, the dicta was, quote, the contractual rights of a preferred stock, for example, its rights to dividend arrearages or preferential rights upon liquidation, end quote, I submit that there is dicta and, in my view, somewhat persuasive authority that the preference means either a liquidation or a dividend, or maybe even something else. I submit that our statutory framework would allow that.
Your learned opponent makes the distinction between a right and a preference. And his argument is we're not really talking about preference here, we're talking about a right. And the issue is whether under the Delaware statute a preferred stock can have no right either to a dividend or alternatively to share in the proceeds on liquidation or dissolution. Putting aside for a minute what priority that right would have.
I again agree with the court below that particularly when you look at the if any language that was argued the corporation had the right for dividend but they decided not to declare it. I agree with the court below's interpretation, though, that the if any talks about the dividend rights. So I agree we're talking about rights, and it would be contrary to the purpose of the statute to just cram down a corporation's throat. You have to offer dividend or liquidation rights to preferred stockholders. That would just, again, ruin the flexibility we've enjoyed. I submit why people incorporate here, in addition to my plug for the grant.
We don't have to decide it in this case, but your colloquy with Justice Jacobs raises the question, what if you had something that's titled preferred stock, but when you read it, it has no preference at all? Is that something that could happen under the Delaware statute? I mean, no one may want to buy it, but that's the logical extension of what we're talking about here. Do you have to have one or the other? Or if you don't have one or the other and it means you really have no preference, is that something that's possible under the statute?
I don't know whether there's a case that addresses that, Your Honor. I don't know the answer to that question.
It happened in Telvest, didn't it?
Well, you're right, that is Telvest. I think then I stand corrected. Telvest does state that you cannot have an illusory preference, so applying the logic of that case.
If you have something that's called preferred stock, but it has no preference either as to dividends or liquidation,
right.
It's not a preferred stock.
Right. So I thank you for correcting me, Your Honor. I submit that Telvest, the court found that the stated preference really wasn't one, it was illusory. So if you are going to list something as preferred, it should have some preference, but again, does not have to have dividends. Liquidation right, which this stock in this case did have.
Well, I ask that because Telvest seems inconsistent with Agnew, as you summarized it to us, based on what the New Jersey Supreme Court said.
Well, Telvest also has that language where there's a suggestion that the preference either be liquidation or dividend, and that's in dicta, but I submit that Telvest does not sink our argument.
Well, then help us decide whether one way to look at your argument is you need to have a preference. If you don't have it on dividends, you have to have it on liquidation or dissolution. But we have the if any language qualifying the dividends, and we don't have the if any language down in the dissolution. Is it possible to have a dividend preference and no liquidation preference?
I believe so, Your Honor. And I wish I'd get in the minds of the legislature, but I think the if any is there in C and not in E, only because there was more of a pronouncement of the preferred stock rights if there are a dividend, such rates, such conditions, such times. So the if any was put there, but by no means did that suggest that because there's no if any in D, then that, that the result, or D I should say, dissolution, the result should be any different. So,
well, the reason I ask that is because one way to reconcile the provisions, one that has if any and one that doesn't, is to conclude that you definitely need a preference on dissolution or liquidation, but you don't necessarily need to get dividends.
One could read the statute that way, Your Honor, because there's no if any in D, and there are two shalls, but one could also read D as, again, stating that you get the dissolution rights, but only if they're in a certificate of corporation. I think you can read it either way, Your Honor. And I wish there was more case law, but I submit you can read it either way, which of course will not impact the holding in this case, which is that because there's an if any in the preferred stock section, the dividend section, that it's not mandatory. And finally, I just want to emphasize that, you know, we did throw in a lot of facts in there. I don't know whether that's court's interested in that today, just by way of background, because I know this court did not want to decide the case in a vacuum, but if there's any questions about...
Well, this was a motion to dismiss in the Court of Chancery, and as the Chancellor pointed out in his footnote, we're pretty well limited to the complaint.
You know, and there was a charge that there was no possible prejudice in the briefing, which is why we threw that in there, just to show that there could be, obviously, in our view, since this happened in 1987, we submit there would be prejudice. And that's why I want to give the court the factual background. Thank you very much. I ran out of my time.
Thank you.
I think on the last series of questions, Greg Holland, that you raised with respect to the issue as to preferences versus rights, I would submit that there's sort of two different issues here. One issue that has come up in a number of cases is what preferences is preferred stock entitled to? And obviously there's case law authority from which you could conclude that if that were the issue in this case, what preferences are involved, that a preference as to liquidation would be enough to make this stock preferred stock. I mean, you could conclude that, but I don't think that's the issue at all here.
A preference presupposes a right, doesn't it? That is, in your parlance, you have to have a right, and then the issue is, what does that right have a preference over the right of some other class of stock?
Right. So we would concede here that this is preferred stock. Okay, for purposes of argument, but only then do you get to the issue here is what does what does 151C mean? Because that tells us a different question. You know, okay, it's preferred stock, but are we correct that it's entitled to receive dividend and entitled to have dividend rights, Mr. Kelly?
Well, what's your position? You have to have either preference, one or the other, or as I was suggesting, maybe you always have to have a preference on liquidation or dissolution, but not necessarily on dividends, or possibly just one is sufficient. You're arguing you need a preference on both.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not, Judge. And I don't think preferences is even an issue here. I'm saying, I'm willing to assume for purposes of this, purposes of argument, that a preference as to one or the other makes it a preferred stock. Now it's a preferred stock. Now I think, Your Honor, you have to go read the statute. You got to say, okay, does this stock also have a right? If we're correct that 150, it has nothing to do with the preference. Does it have a right? It may be lower. It may be a lesser amount.
Your point is that under the Delaware statute, there must be two rights for the stock to be a preferred stock. There has to be a right to dividends, and there has to be a right to share in the proceeds of a dissolution or liquidation, but only one of those rights need have a preference.
Right, and I don't think, Your Honor, you even define the preference in the statute. I don't think the statute tells you one or the other. I think you go to your case law on that, and there are some cases out there as to needing a preference, but I don't think 151C or D tells you that you have to have a preference. I think it just tells you that there have to be some rights.
Well, it does talk about preferences, but their preferences are whatever is stated in the charter by board resolution, correct?
Right, but as to dividends, for instance, it says that the dividends shall be payable in preference to or in such other relationship to the other shares. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a preference. It could be pari passu. It could be even less. Judge Jacobs, on the question you asked Mr. Kelly, okay, what does the shall mean? Why is the shall in there in subparagraph C and D? The distinction that was made doesn't really hold water, because not only in E, as Your Honor pointed out, but also if you look at B. B is sort of broken up, but B has subparagraphs 1 and 2, and then it has a stock, a clause. It says that any stock which may be made redeemable under this section may be redeemed for cash, property, or rights, including securities, etc., at such time or places, price for prices, or rate of rates. and with such adjustments as shall be stated in the certificate of incorporation. So, I mean, I think, and I don't think there's any question that that language does the job, as does the language in E does do the job, as does numerous cases do the job, that if the right is given in the certificate, that's an enforceable obligation.
So, Mr. Moxley, all good things come to an end, and your time is up.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Your Honors.
And thank you both. The court appreciates your argument. We'll take this matter under advisement, and we'll also take a brief recess.
Please rise.